Hi everyone, welcome back to Cheese and Crackers. I'm Bria.
And I'm Krista.
On today's episode, we want to kind of talk more about the situation and what it's actually like when we had the opportunity to get in front of the judge and go to court for one of the first times. And that was actually this January, January 2023. And it was in regards to all of the charges that were filed against my dad in terms of domestic violence, all the criminal charges, and things like that. And while he had this court hearing, whether he pled guilty or not guilty, my mom had the opportunity to give an impact statement to everybody in the room, including him.
I'm going to read you what I said that day in court and what I wrote. I began with, "I would like to thank the court for giving me the opportunity to share a few thoughts. The past few years had become increasingly difficult for me. He changed and became more angry, aggressive, and easily outraged. Living with him made me full of anxiety, never knowing what to expect or what would happen next. The amount of verbal abuse cannot be measured because of the frequency and severity. The physical abuse there was absolutely no excuse for. No one deserves what he put myself or our two daughters through. While I understand the plea deal and his lack of a prior record, I caution the court to believe that he will rehabilitate at this time. He is currently using the civil court system to continue to victimize me with ridiculous filings. To him, I would like to say that while you have called me many names and continue to threaten to kill me, ruin me, bankrupt me, you no longer have the power. I've heard these time and time again. The only thing you have accomplished is making me more determined and stronger than ever to live the life I want and deserve. I can still have back pains from where you broke my back and a scar on my nose from being hit with a boot you threw across the room to strike me. Listen carefully, because when I feel the pain or see the scar, it empowers me. I know I survived you and I was able to get out. You didn't break me or kill me and you won't. My life is better every day without you in it. Here's the most important part you need to hear. You have some intensive work to do on yourself. We girls begged you multiple times to get help and you refused. I'm telling you, if you ever want a chance at having a relationship with your two daughters, you need to fix yourself. Not go through the motions and say all the right things as your manipulative self, but rather dig deep and put the effort into making a better life and you a better person. Bria and Amelia thought the world of you. They were daddy's girls. Bria did everything you asked of her and more, and you know it. Amelia thought of you as her hero, someone she could always depend on. You will never know or understand what you did to that 16-year-old child when you went from one in custody to the DHS report being founded and then to have her find out in court that you wanted to terminate your parental rights. It crushed her, and for that you should reflect and be ashamed of yourself. Thankfully, both girls are doing much better from the damage you caused to both of their self-esteems and their confidence. I hope you reflect on how you spoke to them and treated them, because as a father who wanted them and brought them into the world, you have failed them both. So take this opportunity to rectify a situation or live a miserable life in your own head. The choice is only yours. I can guarantee you that I will do whatever in my power to provide our girls the love they deserve. You already know they were both amazing in their own ways, and you will be the one missing out. In closing, I will end with a quote from one of your favorite songs. Whatever you do today, you'll have to sleep with tonight.
That was read in front of my dad, and there were a couple times throughout that when my mom was reading the victim impact statement that he actually flinched, and he flinched and winced when she talked about power. Never when, like, she talked about my sister I or the relationship that he no longer had with us. It was always when power was discussed.
The reason that we're bringing this up for this episode is because we talked about our healing last episode, Bria and I, but we really haven't talked a lot about Amelia. And I think it's important for listeners and people that know us to understand that Amelia is the one, as we've said before, that is shared the most on social media, but she really didn't want to do this podcast. So we were fine with that. We didn't push her, pressure. And after the first podcast, she said, "Well, you can say my name. I don't care if you talk about me." So that kind of surprised Bree and I because we thought she didn't want any part of it at all. And I think what we want to do with this episode is talk a little bit about Amelia. We want people to understand that even though we dealt with it one way, she dealt with it totally different, but yet it got her to a better place.
Like I said before, there were a lot of different ways that we each all coped and healed. And she definitely had a more unique way about healing than the rest of us. But there's reasons for that.
And I think it actually started prior to the divorce or me filing the papers and stuff. Because as things were getting more complicated at home and he was becoming more aggressive and acting out, she started wanting to stay away from home a lot. Being a teenager, she was dabbling in some things that she shouldn't be dabbling in. And I think it was just different dynamic. Her dad was becoming frustrated with her. Then we saw a little bit more rebellion.
And I would say she tried to escape. She tried to escape from home. She didn't want any part of what was going on. She'd come home if he was away. If she and him were here for a long amount of time, there would be some type of physical altercation. And, you know, they weren't seeing eye to eye like they used to.
And while I think Bree and I were a little bit, well, I don't think, I know, Bree and I were a little bit more intimidated by him, Amelia was the one that would stand up, mouth back, and go toe-to-toe with him. And she'd always kind of been what we called a spirited child, where she would just speak her piece. I mean, you always knew where you stood with Amelia because she just told you what she thought.
Yeah, she seriously is one of the probably few people that I know that truly has no fear when it comes to anything or anybody.
And part of that's that whole adventurous side of her, that she's just ready to try anything, do anything. She's my social butterfly. She doesn't know a stranger. She can strike up a conversation with anyone. She just, Amelia is my child that lives life to the fullest. I mean, everywhere she goes, she's going to do what she wants. She's going to have fun. And that's just her personality. And she's always been that way. As things changed and as he progressively got worse, it changed her too.
Oh, I would definitely agree. I think there's one incident that was really Amelia's turning point when it came to my dad. And that was one day I was gone from the house and he, I don't know what happened, if they had words about something or she mouthed off, but he basically strangled her, and it was to the point where she had bruises on her neck.
This was a big incident where it went into the DHS report and it was founded, and we had taken pictures of it and knew that I would be filing for divorce shortly. So DHS became involved, and at that time we were still in the process and I'd filed, and he had said that he wanted custody as well, and so he wanted at least joint custody. That was fine. You know, I didn't think she'd want to see him, but that was her choice. And then he wanted to have the court appoint a guardian ad litem, which I didn't have a problem with that at all, so I agreed to that. And then the DHS report came back, and after they conducted the interview with him, looked at all the evidence, it was founded. And so, as I said in that victim impact statement, it went from him wanting custody, then the report being founded, then he decided he was going to file an appeal. That never happened. But at that court hearing for our protective order was when Amelia found out that he would agree to the no contact order, but he wanted all of his parental rights terminated. And I think that was a turning point for her, that she thought she could always count on him and he'd always be there for her because he always told her that, and they were so much alike in a lot of ways that I think it really threw her in a tailspin.
Yeah, she was completely blindsided by this. You know, she was 16 at the time, so when you have a parent that wants to see you, that then decides that he doesn't want to see you, and you know that you're not going to have any contact with him for, at least in this case at the time, it was a year, which now it's extended to 5 years. There's nothing you can really do about it. And so, you know, she went from having conversations with him every day and having him pick her up from school to now not having a dad at all. Pretty much, I would say, kind of overnight, if not in a week.
Well, and I think that's the thing that people need to realize when it comes to you girls. You had to go through a whole gamut of emotions because you had not only the anger, but you had the grief and stuff because it was like you'd lost somebody, because you really did. You couldn't have any contact with them. You know, I think that bothered you. Like last week you talked about people coming up to you and saying, well, he's your dad and stuff. But I don't think they understood or even understand that it's not you saying you don't want to see him, or her saying, or him saying he doesn't want to see you. It's the court saying that that cannot happen. And the only way it can be reversed is to go back to court and the court order that it's null and voided.
But in this case, it's so serious that that will never happen. I think it was a very, very hard time for Amelia because I know that when I grew up, I was never as close to my dad as she was with my dad because they were seriously so much alike. They have similar mannerism in some sense, but they also just bonded because she acted more like him than I did. I acted more like my mom, and anybody that's close to our family, they know this and can attest to this.
And I don't think you mean that in a bad way. And listeners might think, oh, well, why would she want to be like him? And I don't think it's that point. But he was always more social, where I was always more shy and reserved. He would be more adventurous, like the, oh, let's go do this kind of guy, like Amelia was.
Yeah.
Or is. And so I think they just had it more of the same personality, where they were more just go on the fly and live life.
Go with the flow.
Yeah. And you know, and he was that way as long as it was his way. Amelia kind of witnessed that growing up.
Mm-hmm. And she also got by with a lot more things than I did growing up.
Here we go.
there were just different standards for the both of us. You know, I had to make honor roll, but he didn't care if she got a B. So it was just things like that.
But I think, in all fairness, I think, like, she'd tell him, well, Dad, I don't like to read. It's boring. And so he could relate to that.
Yeah, because he
and
didn't
so,
like to either.
So he was like, okay, well, let's go play ball. Or, you know what I mean? It was like a whole different...
Rules.
Yeah, yeah. And I think he worried less about Amelia because we had you, and there's about a 4.5 year age gap between you guys. So you were the easy one to read to and do all those things because you were the only one. Mm-hmm. And if we're going to be honest, Amelia came out screaming, yelling, her own person, and everybody kept telling me, oh, she'll grow out of it, it's the terrible twos, and she'll grow out of it, it's the terrible threes. And Amelia's just always been her own person. I mean, she came out, she was allergic to everything, milk, soy, acid reflux. I mean, she was just her own person from the get-go.
Yeah, and so obviously, that's nothing new to us, but I guess what I'm trying to say is seeing her grow up one way and not really having to ever deal with anything too seriously, watching her get through this turning point in her life was really hard because we couldn't do anything for her because she had to emotionally cope on her own and she had to figure out what path she wanted to go down and choose.
And the more we tried to fix it or help her, the more she pulled away. And we had family, friends, Jeannie, my best friend Mel. We had several people sit down, my cousin Lisa. We had several people sit down with us and talk to us about how our family unit was changing and how Bree had always been like Amelia's other mother, trying to keep her out of trouble and get her to do the right thing. And at that point, Amelia didn't need another mother. She didn't before, but Bria didn't understand that. Because Bria and I were closer because of the business and things that we talked about and understood that Amelia didn't. Amelia thought Bria and I were closer. And that really took just some time and some good communication to for everybody to realize what their role was in the family now.
For a long time, I think she thought that we were tag teaming, or it was one-sided because she lost dad, which was a part of her team, because they acted alike, like we already said. And so she felt lost and, like, nobody was there for her or, like, understood what she was going through because she was on her own. So she didn't really feel comfortable communicating with us what she was feeling, or she didn't really run to us with her problems because she felt like she was truly isolated, which wasn't the case, but in her young teenage mind, that's how she perceived it.
And the good news now is it's not that way. And you guys have a different relationship mm-hmm. than she and I have and you and I have. And she knows that we both love her and that I don't have to tell you everything. And she's her own person and I love her for who she is. That has been a big turning point. But before we get to how we got there, we need to back up because, you know, she's still, Amelia was always a child that liked to push the boundaries. If you said go left, she was going to go right. If you told her to pick up her toys, she was going to make sure she
got more
left
out.
More out. You know, she was just that kind of a way. And like I said, we called her spirited. And you know, there is nothing wrong with spirited kids. You just know that they're the ones that's going to run the world someday, that they better be a CEO or in charge because they're the take charge kind of kids that's going to march to their own drummer, beat their own path, and make their own way through life. And that sums up Amelia. So she would press her luck, and, you know, there'd be some curfews that she'd come home late. And she did that a few times when we were all still together, too. And it got to the point where, you know, she was just testing the waters, I'd say, a little bit. I think she had a lot of confusion and anger and was acting out. And she wanted to be with her friends because I think she really felt like she wanted to fit in and be loved. And anytime you're 16, you're trying to find yourself anyway. And just that whole teenage years is hard, let alone when you have a life altering or changing event to go through with it. Last summer, my mom had a knee replacement surgery and I was staying with her. Amelia called and told me that she was staying out. And I said, oh no, you get home, take the car and you go home. And it was already past her curfew, and she knew that. So she opted to stay out all night because she knew I was taking care of Grandma. She stayed out Saturday night, and she stayed out Sunday night. Monday, I went to the sheriff's department, and I reported her missing. And I told the sheriff deputy that I didn't need it blasted all over social media or anything. I knew where she was. I knew who she was with because she kind of forgot that she had her Apple Watch here so we could see her location and know what she was doing. We hadn't told her that yet. So if she listens to this, she's going to find out. So it wasn't like we didn't know where she was at. It was just that she was being her own. Yeah, being her own person and pushing the boundary. So anyway, I went down and talked to the deputy, and thank goodness he had teenage kids and understood, and I asked him about my options and talked to him a little bit, put her down as missing. Well, first of all, let me back up. When I talked to my therapist and she said, well, let her couch surf for a little bit. You got to give her tough love, Krista. This is what she needs because, you know, she's been given her way all of her life, and this is where the rubber meets the road, and it's going to define how she turns out and your relationship with her. So I packed a suitcase with her stuff in it, and you can ask her to this day. It was like all of her nice stuff, and I set it out on the deck at her back door. When she came home Monday, she found the suitcase outside and grabbed it and ran. We watched on the Ring camera later on, but come to find out, she knew that I'd filed a missing persons report.
I think that we didn't want to happen because we wanted her to figure out the consequences on her own. I can thank my boyfriend at the time for that one, for letting her know. And so she knew that we already went down there and she was going to push the boundary even more.
I had went to the sheriff's department. I had contacted my attorney so she knew what was going on. And everybody, you know, I talked to my therapist. Everybody was aware of the situation and knew that I was still tracking and watching her. Well, she didn't know that. So she called her dad and he said he didn't talk to her. He just listened. To make a long story short, then he called his attorney all upset because here was this child homeless on the streets and they needed something done and so on and so forth. So anyway, that night she was with a friend and they were in a car accident, and I got a phone call from the police department telling me that she was fine and all the parties were fine, but I needed to come pick her up.
And that was kind of when she, I would say, had a reality check, and she kind of turned it around for the better. You know, she was struggling.
We had a good long heart-to-heart that night. We had another friend here that was kind of a neutral party. She was friends with Amelia, too, and one of your friends. And so we were on the deck, and I just kind of laid down the law like my mom did to me. And I said, you know, nobody else can help you. You have to decide what kind of life you want to lead. If you want to go run around and have a reputation and do whatever, then that's fine. But you're not going to do it here under my roof. You can be any kind of person you want to be. But at the end of the day, you're the only one that can make the choices and decide.
I think that was the first talk that she really understood and got, because everything switched from there.
Yeah, she, you know, she went out and got a job and was doing really well at it. She went back to school. We didn't have to worry about the skipping and stuff. She did some online classes. Yeah, she's just been thriving since then. And I have to say that with her graduation this week, she's graduating from high school. She'll be the first one to tell you and admit, a year ago, I wasn't sure I was going to graduate. And we've talked about that even this week, that she's come so far in so many ways that she's just realized what's important to her and what she wants to do and is more focused and driven than ever before.
As far as it goes with the relationship with our dad, I think there is a bit of her that's holding on to hope, which is totally fine. You know, like I said before, we each have different relationships with him in the past. So that's totally up to her. But I think she realizes that she doesn't need somebody to help her get through things. She has to get through things on her own. And when she healed in a different way than us, which was doing all these things and finding out that that wasn't what was making her happy, but spending time with her animals, working with animals, and doing things like that, that was what truly made her happy and want to do the right things.
Yeah, and she still has tons of friends. You know, her social calendar is busy all the time, and she's a teenager, and she's out, and she's going. But, you know, here's an example. The other night, she was going over to a friend's house. You know, I didn't say anything to her, and she's home. Every night this week, she was home by 9:30, and it's her graduation week. And you know, they're all getting together and having a good time and that kind of stuff. And never once did I say, don't forget curfew or anything like that, because she's just more responsible now.
Yeah, I think she knows that we're all truly in this together and that we're all just trying to get through it still to this day, because it's still crazy currently. And so I think she realizes that we all still have struggles and that we all are still healing as well.
And I do think part of it, too, is when it all started and she was 16, I don't think she understood it all. But I'll give you an example, and I kind of alluded to this in one of the other episodes, but, you know, she had to have orthodontia work done and oral surgery. And so a year ago, last January, I had petitioned the court for the trust, which was the money from our savings, to pay for those bills. And I had paid my part, but I was still making payments. And so we went, and it was basically awarded to me. And this was in March, I think. April, I was supposed to get paid. And he filed a petition wanting the two places, the oral surgeon and the orthodontist, subpoenaed for the records. Now, my attorney had turned in, and she'd turned in the bill with the paperwork to the court and had told his attorney that we would give them anything that they wanted. But he felt the need that he had to subpoena, and not just like the office girls, but the owners. On the filings, it actually said that it had to be read to the doctors, the dentists. And And I was telling her about that. And she's like, why would he do that? That's embarrassing. I'm the one that has to go back. And I'm like, yeah, exactly. I think as things have went on, that nothing really surprises her, but she just doesn't understand
why.
And I think at the beginning, I think she thought that I just had a lot of anger and I was trying to get back at him or whatever. But as all of this stuff has been happening, I think she has realized now that, like, well, yeah, why?
I think
why is that a big deal? I mean, I think
picking up on his true colors.
Yeah. But I do think she's seeing things more for what they are because she's growing up and she's looking at things from different perspectives.
And since the 2-year period that this has went on, she's had more life experiences. She's had more encounters with other people that maybe have the same traits as him. And she knows what to look out for. And, you know, we're really proud of her because she has recognized some of the traits that my dad had. And she knows what to look out for when she's in relationships with people. Mm-hmm. And so there's just a lot of things like that that are really surprising and really good.
And at the end of the day, I think she knows that you and I love her. Mm-hmm. We have her back. We do anything for her. And I think that gives her a little bit of security too. I think sometimes, as you know, with any family, we drive her nuts. Because we all drive each other nuts. That's just part of life, especially when people get stressed and it's busy. And this time of year, especially. But I just am so happy and proud of how she has come through this and her mindset compared to where it was. Because she was all over the place. And her emotions were all over the place. And now I feel like she's much more stable and in a better headspace.
Yeah, I would agree.
And responsible. And I just am so thankful for that because no matter what it goes back to that control thing. No matter what we tried to do or control or make her go to therapy or whatever, it didn't work. She had to be the one to do it and to do it for herself. And I think along with that, we need to mention again that a lot of this takes time. There's no quick fix. There's no, oh, it happened and, you know, it's 2 months later and I'm over it. No, it's an ongoing process. And we're making progress. I think we all still have our triggers. But just the fact that she's graduating, she's happy, she's healthy, she's thriving. I couldn't be more proud of her.
So on that note, Amelia, if you're listening, we love you. Congrats on graduating. You're going to go really far in life, I already know, because you have no fear. And
when you put your mind to something, you don't give up.
You do anything.
And everything in your power to make it happen.
That too. Shout out to you. And maybe we'll get you on the podcast here soon.
But no pressure. We love you.
Thanks to everyone for tuning in and listening. And as always, if you have any feedback or want to show your support and love, you can email us at cheeseandcrackersus@gmail.com. You can find our social media descriptions below. And, of course, as always, you can hear a new episode on Monday at 5 a.m. on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and more.